Yeah, so that wasn't at Jaws. That was at a different wave. That was actually in Australia. Yeah, he was over. Like this would have been in, I think, 2013 as well. Yeah, we were surfing this bommie, and he rocked up with a couple other guys, and I was with one of my friends, Camel. And yeah, Slater was towing, and we're all getting fun waves, and it was all good vibes and whatnot. But yeah, Slater towed into this one, and I was in the spot too. And yeah, Camel was just shouting at me to go. And I was like, ah, oh, fuck it. I'll just, yeah, if he's shouting at me to go, I'll just go. And yeah, I burnt him pretty good, but we both made the wave, and yeah, it was all smiling and laughs and whatnot. And yeah, Camel paddles up to him afterwards and goes, and just goes, oh, that's for when you burnt me in 95 at G Land.
Welcome to Speaking from Water, episode 50. And today we have a straight legend from Western Australia. He's one of the world's greatest big wave surfers, slab surfers. He's been all over the world from Margaret River to Tiapu to Jaws to Mavericks to Mulgamore in Ireland. And he has a new movie with Cane Salmon called Cold Brew. And we are just so elated and excited to have Zach Haynes on the line. Zach, thank you so much for joining us this evening, our morning here on the East Coast.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, thanks for having me. That's somebody introduction there.
Yeah, dude. Well, I gotta tell you, I've been following you ever since I got Kane on the line back in I guess it was November-ish. When you guys scored Mulgamore, really just sick and solid. We have a local boy here, Mason Barnes, and he got a photo or a video from Mr. Salmon, and I was like, I gotta get him on the line. So we spoke like the day after that swell, and ever since then, I've been following your all's trip throughout Europe pretty tightly. And in preparation for this video, I watched all your videos, and then this morning I got on a, just a thick DM with Kane, and he gave me your real legit bio that I couldn't find on the internet. So I'm just like, I'm elated, bro. And thank you for the power. Thank you for bringing it.
No worries, thank you. Nah, stoked.
Yeah,
Cheers.
bro. So first things first, how are you today? And what's going on in Western Australia here? May 1st.
Yeah, fuck, not a lot really. Just cruising at the moment, sort of waiting for winter to kick in, and yeah, just trying to surf as much as possible, and yeah, pretty much just waiting for swells really. Yeah.
How is it coming down from such a sick winter in Europe?
Well, it's nice to get back to a bit of warm weather, really. When we first got back, there was a bit of a heat wave, so it was, yeah, like 50 degrees for nearly 2 weeks or something, so it was pretty hot, and not a lot of waves really coming back here to summer. But yeah, you always get a surf in and always just grovel around and make the most of whatever's around, just keep fit and keep surfing.
How is that for you going from the climate you're just born and raised in? It's very warm where you're from, to going to Europe in winter when it's just like wetsuits, booties, hoods, freezing cold. How do you acclimate yourself?
I don't know. I kind of enjoy the cold. It's like, I guess because we don't really ever need to wear a 6 mil and boots, gloves and hood here. It's kind of a different adventure almost, getting to put it all on. It's kind of exciting. Whereas here, you're just surfing in a 3.2 or a 4.3 max, and doesn't really get that cold. So yeah, kind of something different and brings a new sort of excitement to it all.
Yeah, sick. So like looking at your footage, it looks like that wasn't your first trip to Europe. How did this trip compare? And what is it about you know, Portugal and Ireland that brings you back?
I think it's just the good quality of waves. Like we get to sort of escape our summer and go into winter again. So I guess chasing the endless winter and getting swells over there while it's dead flat at home. And yeah, sort of it doesn't seem to be that crowded really over there. Like you can sort of find your waves and just go explore and have fun and sort of check out a different culture and that kind of stuff.
Chasing the endless winter. That is that's so sick, man. Cause like people out there in I guess the regular world are like, you know, they're familiar with chasing the endless summer. And that's been a cliche in surf lore forever. Like, oh, summer's when the waves are, but really winter is what brings the waves, northern and southern hemispheres. Like you're now waiting, you're going into winter, you're waiting for the waves. You're going to Europe where there's waves in the wintertime. I love that. Where were you all basing yourself out of?
We were sort of based in Portugal for most of this trip. Spent a good solid chunk of time, yeah, just sort of hanging out there and sort of surfing the waves around Portugal, sort of up towards Nazaré and then back down towards Ericeira and Supertubes and just hanging out around that sort of area.
What's your favorite spot in Portugal?
I really like Supertubes. It's such a fun wave, and like even when it's small, you can still grovel it. And then when the swell picks up and it's the right direction, it absolutely pumps there. So, yeah, I really like it around that area. And there's a few other waves around the place too there that you can sort of surf in different winds and different conditions.
And Supertubes is a beach break, right?
Yeah, it's a beach break.
But like a really like pitchy, throwy beach break, and you're really accustomed to slabs. How do those two elements compare, the thick beach break to the slabs?
I guess like some of the beach breaks there, like especially Supertubes, it can get really sort of sucky and drainy, like especially if you get it on the right day with the right banks and in the right sort of rip or on the right bank, it'll be like, yeah, it'll really drain up and suck out. And yeah, you get some pretty heavy waves there.
And y'all went up to Ireland. Tell us about how you decided to make that trip, how you saw the swell coming in, and what were the factors that, because I believe you've been to Ireland before, and did you kind of like have this like burning desire to do it again? And tell us about that feeling.
Yeah, been done a few trips to Ireland now. I really like it over there. Sort of the whole vibe over there is amazing. The waves are super fun. It's cold, so it's sort of different to what we've got at home. The scenery is just unreal. Even if you don't go and surf over there, you get to go check out like a whole new place, and like the pubs are fucking incredible too. We were down in Morocco when we saw that swell coming, and it looked like it was going to be pretty good. Like it was a bit iffy whether the winds are going to be good or not, but we just kind of took the chance and thought, yeah, we'll go check it out, may as well, because sort of one of the waves that I really love to surf and try and surf anyway. And yeah, that swell popped up, so we thought, oh well, we may as well, you know, give it a shot and try to go score it. So yeah, booked a ticket and flew up there, and yeah, paid off luckily. Like it wasn't all time pumping, but got to get a handful of waves and hang out with all the local lads up there that are always really nice and welcoming. So yeah, it's good fun.
Well, I saw the footage, and I would say, God, like that looks so pumping to me. And it's just amazing that you guys got that. Tell us about your session, and can you describe what it was like? What the wave there? I guess we're referring to Mulgamore. From the outside, not riding it, it's just this the thickest, greenest tube on the planet. What's the sensation of riding such a thing?
Yeah, it's a pretty strange wave compared to what sort of used to surfing, because it's so like it's a sucky slab, but it's also like quite tall, and a lot of the slabs that we have at home we tow because you can't paddle them, so it's quite different paddling into a slab on such a long board as well. It takes like the local guys there just absolutely rule it because they're just so. But the way they position their boards and everything, it's a whole different sort of style of surfing almost. But yeah, it's incredible to watch those guys get crazy ones.
Yeah, shouts out to the Garoge. He's been on the program before, and the talent there. What was the biggest learning curve there for you? Like, did you have to eat it a bunch of times to really get the concept? Or what was that like?
I think I've only made one sort of half decent wave out there. The rest of them have just sort of ended up in a beating, just from, I guess, poor wave selection and sort of positioning myself a bit wrong. But yeah, the way the wave comes in, bends around, and sort of warps off the reef with steps and boils, and yeah, it's a pretty difficult wave to surf. But I think if you pick the right one, it'll be nice and real nice and clean. I still haven't really managed to pick one of those ones yet, but it just means you've got to go back, I guess.
Yeah. So when you do just like it pounded and pounded, how do you mentally get back out there? What's your method? Kind of advice do you have for people?
I don't know. It's a tough question, I guess. Sort of. I don't really think about it too much. I sort of like it's kind of to an extent enjoyable getting smoked. Like if you go out and have a session where it's like, you know, wherever it might be, where like at a big slab or something, and you go the whole session without falling, you kind of feel you come in and you're kind of like, did I even surf? Like you kind of cheated it almost. Like, yeah, like you. I think you've got to have a wipeout and a couple beatings and enjoy it as much as you can and sort of make the most of it. Because that, you know, falling on the big ones and coming up and still feeling okay and not injured sort of helps to build your confidence a bit, I think.
Would you say that for a guy like you, a true just champion slab surfer, the dopamine rush of eating it is, and the joy of that is almost greater than the making of it?
I wouldn't quite say greater than the making of it, because when you fall, you're always sort of like, oh, fuck, why did I fall? Like, what could have I done better? Like, you're sort of a bit bummed at yourself if the wave was perfect and it was because of you that fell. You definitely get a rush from falling. Like, you come up, or if you, like, you have a big beat down, you come up and like everything's okay and your mates are there laughing at you or whatever. Like it gives you a good kick and makes you sort of hungrier and sort of want to push yourself harder and to make one that it was like that. You're like, oh, I've got to give it another shot. I've got to go again. Like I've got to make one of these.
And to people listening out there, they're probably like, how does he do it? How does he get through these big waves? And from my own just experience and knowledge, like there seems to always be a channel at such locations. And can you speak to that, this natural phenomenon of there being a channel and almost a safety zone at such a just bizarre, extreme wave? And how is that? And what kind of refuge as a surfer do you find in the channel?
Yeah, I think sort of the channel at all these places, I guess, is just sort of the way the reef's designed, well, not designed, but formed. And like a lot of the places, because it's coming from deep water to shallow water, and there's deep water all around, so the deep water is always sort of the safe zone. And it just works out perfect that that's the safe zone where you can sort of get away from the carnage, and you know you can always go hang out in the channel and watch your mates get sick ones, and it's always like, yeah, seems like a good vibe in the channel of all the big slabs and stuff, because everyone's just having a great time and cheering each other on and yelling and hooting for each other. So it's pretty cool.
It's like almost the bleachers at a sporting event. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, for sure.
Sick. Can you speak to the sound that the wave makes at these spots? And which spot in particular does the sound just resonate in you, you know, weeks, months, years later? And can you describe that for us?
Yeah, the sound, it's pretty incredible sometimes. Like when you hear a really big one that's got a really thick lip just detonate into some pretty shallow water, like the sound, you could, I guess, compare it to the sound of like an aeroplane taking off almost or something. It's just so loud and deep and, yeah, almost frightening but exciting in a way. Probably the place where you sort of hear it the most would, I think, would probably be maybe the right, or some of those slabs down the south coast of sort of where we live. There's just some insane waves down there and break into such shallow water almost onto dry reef, and the noise that it sort of makes is incredible.
I want to get to the right and the waves around you. We've had in the past couple of months just a number of legends, from Russell Ord to Ryan Hardy on this program. And like all of them, you know, the common denominator is they speak of the right with just awe, and just it seems to be the spot on the planet. Well, let's go there. Like, where does the right land in your heart as far as all the places you've been? You know, we've been down the list from Tahiti to Hawaii to Europe. Like, how does the right fit in that puzzle?
Yeah, well, the right for me, I wouldn't be here if it weren't, like, doing what I'm doing, if it wasn't for the right, really. I went there for the first time when I would have been 15 or 16, I think. I can't quite remember. It was 2010 or 2011. I went down there for the first time with Alfie Cater. He took me down. Rolling up into the channel, seeing that place for the first time was just mind-blowing. And ever since that day, I've just been addicted to it. That, like, the waves around it and, yeah, the right itself, it's, yeah, the best thing in the world. You can't, I don't think there's any other better wave. Like, it is very unpredictable and it's not perfect, and you get closeouts, and it's by far the heaviest, most violent and longest hold downs out of everywhere I've surfed. But yeah, I don't think you can beat it almost. I haven't seen anywhere that's quite like it yet. I'm sure there is other places out there, but yeah, I haven't seen of them yet.
That's incredible. And for it to be your local territory, I mean, you know, live next to it, because from what I understand, it's like a mission to get to. And in my mind, that seems like one of the most hardcore parts of it, is if anything goes wrong, you're not close to civilization, really, right? You're out there in the hardcore nature.
Yeah, it's not super isolated. Like, it's pretty far. Like, it's probably, there's a couple of small towns nearby. But yeah, either, like, wherever you launch a jet ski from, it's sort of half an hour on the jet ski to get there. And then, yeah, from there, like, the towns aren't too far away, but yeah, it's definitely not just straight out the front of a harbor or something like Mavericks is, or anything like that.
So what was that first trip like for you? I'm sure you heard about it. And then can you set the scene for us rolling up on the wave? Maybe it was in the morning, and can you describe the conditions and then how that session went?
Yeah, so we rolled up. I think it was actually late afternoon. So just as a storm front was passing by, we got out there, and the wind was sort of just dropping. I still remember it clearly, and rolling up, and it was late afternoon, golden light, giant, and yeah, just seeing these huge things rolling through and just exploding, and I was just sitting there just going, "Whoa, this is pretty wild! Like, this is the real deal." If you're gonna, you know, if you want to do it, you gotta fucking just man up and do it. And Ben, yeah, would have been 15 or 16, and got a couple sort of smaller insiders that sort of just got the bug going.
Were you towing?
Yeah, towing. Yeah, there's a lot of debate on, you know, whether it's paddleable and whatnot, but I kind of don't know if it is really. I think it's a tow wave. The bodyboarders paddle it here and there, but yeah, I think it's be pretty difficult to paddle.
I've read you have a fond liking for bodyboarders and bodyboard culture. Can you describe, you know, coming from being a surfer as you are, the respect that you give bodyboarders and why?
Yeah, well, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be surfing half the waves we do now, I think. Like those guys, the original guys that found the right and all those slabs, it was all the bodyboarders. And they go so hard and charge crazy. So it's sort of good to go on trips with them because they push you so much harder. And like pretty much all my close friends are bodyboarders. So it's, yeah, they charge crazy, which is sick.
Yeah, so sick. So let's take a step back. This morning when I was talking to Kane on the DM, he kind of broke a window into your early life that just I'm sitting myself in the parking lot waiting to get into the pool. I'm a pool swimmer. I love swimming, you know, for exercise. Always have. And he's like, yeah, Zach growing up and his brother, Jordan. You guys were champion swimmers. He went on and he said that you guys just hated the structure of practice. Before we get to that whole concept, I want to know, like, when did you really start swimming? Who introduced you to swimming in the water? And tell us about, like, the earliest seed of Zach's experience with water and swimming.
Yeah, Mum always forced us to go swimming, which is pretty funny. She'd always, get us up at bloody 4:30 or 5 in the morning and take us to the swim pool to do swim training and whatnot. Yeah, my brother, he's a weapon. Like you can, never keep up with him. He's, real fast, always super athletic and, good in the water. But, we sort of, always are sort of forced into going swimming. But, it's probably paid off now because, it's a great thing, really.
And what ages were that? Were you there? And what was like your swimming career span? And then what stroke were you really good at that time?
Probably pretty young, I guess. Maybe from, I don't, yeah, real young, I guess. It'd be hard to say. Maybe like 6 all the way up to probably 13 or so, 14 maybe. And it was like, I'd rather just go surfing early in the morning than going to the swimming pool. It was all a mix of, strokes, I guess. Probably the best one was freestyle just because it's the easiest.
When would you say you like peaked, I guess, as in your swimming career? And what were you doing? Were you doing like meets?
Yeah, it would do meets and that kind of stuff. I get like swimming competitions and stuff. Probably that was really when we probably 12, 10, that kind of age, maybe a little bit older. Yeah, so did a few of them and whatnot, and my brother was always winning all of them, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So, how much older is he?
He's 2 years older than me.
And did he stick with it, or did he drop off too?
Yeah, he dropped off too. Yeah, but he surfs heaps as well, and he bodyboarded a lot back in the day too. So.
And during this time, like in Australia, the youth lifeguarding, nippers, you call it. Did you get into that at that same period?
Yeah, we were both doing heaps of that when we were real young as well, which is a really good thing because they teach you a lot about sort of the basics about the ocean and rips and where to swim, how to read currents and rips and just general stuff about the ocean, which is pretty cool to learn at a young age.
And then was that really like fundamental in developing you as a surfer, would you say?
I'd say so, yeah, just because you're sort of down the beach sort of most afternoons or especially on Sundays doing all their little training things and sort of getting taught just the different things about the beaches and all that kind of stuff from being really little. So yeah, it's always a good sort of thing to do.
Kane said Rockwell Beach was your first like home break, and this is at City Beach. Can you tell us about that beach? Tell us about some memories you have of it and how it kind of developed you as a waterman.
Yes, it's actually it's a pretty bad beach. It doesn't really ever get good.
Yeah, he was saying that.
But yeah, I don't know. To me, what I used to think that it used to pump. I remember riding down on my bike some mornings. You get down there at 4 o'clock in the morning or something. You'd see like a knee-high wave, sort of peeling off for 20 meters, and you'd think, "Oh, it's pumping. This is the best ever. It doesn't get any better than this." And yeah, it's like you froth it at the time, but you go back now and look at it, and it's pretty much just a knee-high closeout onto the shore.
Sick.
But yeah.
So it set the stoke. What age are you saying that you would do this? Was this during your swimming career?
I was probably a little bit older then, I guess. I didn't really start surfing until I was probably 12, I think. But
Wow.
yeah, probably about 12 or so. So when I was, probably since then till about 15 or 16, I'd ride down the beach all the time, just froth out.
Sick, dude. So swimming really was like the hardcore beginning. And then at 12, you like in my mind, like that might be to some kind of late for someone of your caliber today. Like, so you would say that you didn't really even start standing up surfing until about 12. Is that right?
Yeah, or maybe a little bit younger, maybe about 10 or so. Like, yeah, was always into it. Would always go down the beach and hang out and play around on bodyboards and whatnot. But yeah, I don't think I really started till, maybe, 12. Between 10 and 12, I think, yeah.
Do you remember that first wave that you actually like rode the line and weren't on the whitewater? And can you tell us about it?
I can't really remember it. I don't know. It might have just been a whitewater, the one I can remember, but I can just remember just frothing, just always being down the beach and having a good time. So there's not really any one first wave that stands out. It's just having fun and playing around at the beach, really.
What was the surf culture in your area at that time? Did you have any mentors that you looked up to, or was it just like the pure nature of the surfing that you found inspiring?
Yeah, there was a board riders club at City Beach where we grew up. So that was, it was always cool. There was always the older guys that were ripping, and they'd have, comps every so often, and everyone would hang out and be down the beach like every afternoon, surfing and hanging out all arvo. So yeah, it's a good culture there, and we'd all have fun and surf all the time. So yeah, it was a pretty cool spot to grow up and sort of get into it.
Is there a name for us that you have, a standout local boy who like inspired you?
Wouldn't be one sort of in particular, I guess that just the whole group really of the city board riders. Like I'd say that'd be the just the whole group of everyone then the community.
That's sick. So you go on and you surf Margaret River at 13. That's what I understand from Kane. How did that go? And what was that step up from the city beach to Margaret River? And for those listening that don't know, Margaret River is just one of the world's most premier waves. The world tour goes there every year for a competition, and it's one of the best in the world. So how did that go? And what was it in you that you were like, I'm taking it to the next level?
Yeah, so we used to go down there for holidays and that, because it's about 3 hours from where we were living. We'd go down there all the time, and at first I was sort of terrified of the sort of bigger surf, but I guess that's what sort of drove me to want to do it a bit more. And yeah, there was just sort of one day that was sort of pretty solid, and I was lent to, I think it was a 7.10 maybe, single fin, that one of the older guys lent me. He said, yeah, if you want to give it a shot, go out and give it a crack. I would have been a bit older than 13. I don't really know how old, maybe 15, 14 or 15 or something. And yeah, just went out, and it was like, it felt like it would have been 20 or 30 foot, but I think it was more like 10, 8 foot or something. But yeah, it was just sick being out there and seeing waves like that sort of so close, and being scared and out of the comfort zone. That sort of was so exciting and thrilling about it.
Would you say that was like your first slab experience, the way the wave there just boxes up?
Yeah, it, like main break where it was, it's not so much of a slab, it's like more of like a long sort of slopey wall, but it does have its days where it throws a bit. But there, that was definitely my first experience of a I guess what you'd call a big wave.
And how was that session? Did you were you making them, or were you taking it? Like how did it go?
Off memory, I think I got maybe two or three that sort of off the shoulder, kind of, you know, slopey sleigh rides that were fun, got the heart going and got me frothing. And then I got one that was pretty steep drop, and I was behind the peak and like made the drop, did a bottom turn and just got exploded by white water. And yeah, I think that was the one that really sort of got me pumped, because it was, yeah, the crazy drop for me at the time, and then got smoked. So it was, yeah, everything was good.
Were you there with your brother?
Nah, it was my mum that was, yeah, she took me down and was just sitting in the car park watching and cruising, and was saying, she was asking me why I didn't get barreled.
Oh man, that's good. Okay, so you leave that session, and then was like the hunger deep? And then where was next on your list?
Yeah, I guess sort of, that's what sort of ignited the flame for it, that session. So after that, it was just, yeah, anything that was solid, I wanted to try and surf and, you know, see all the videos of Mavericks and those kind of waves. And yeah, that was the next mission, to go to Mavericks, which I got to go do. It was later that year or a year later. Yeah, the old girl took me over there and posted up for a while, and yeah, got to have a couple of sessions out at Mavericks, which was sick, and that was wild.
Bro, that's like so extreme, just mentally for me. Here, you're only surfing really a couple of years. You're a young guy, and you go to Margaret River. You get super stoked. You go back to your, what you call just like a little beach, you know, like that's, you know, not crazy. How did you decide, like, I'm going to Mavericks? And how did you convince your mom to make the trip? Because that's a big trip from Western Australia. And what were your resources as far as boards? And tell us about that.
Yeah, I guess just watched heaps of videos on YouTube from of Mavericks. The Powerlines guys would just always have the sickest videos of Mavericks. So I watched every single one of them about 10 times. I was just like, fuck, I've got to go surf this wave. This is sick. Like, this is the place. So yeah, I just was frothing on it and sort of one winter for it, just convinced mum to take me over there, and it was amazing. Got a board made. It was a 9-2, I think. Took that over and got fortunate enough to get out there maybe 3 or 4 times in the trip, and yeah, it was just pumped on it.
And were you chasing a swell, or did you just put yourself there until the swell came?
We just went, really, because I didn't even know what sort of swell it needed or anything. So all I knew was where it was from a map, and I had no idea what conditions or anything. Yeah, it was pretty naive to it all, but just got lucky, really. I'd say dumb luck, and that paid off, because you could have easily gone and got nothing. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I have not surfed there, but I've been to Half Moon Bay and looked at it, and the place is just gnarly, as you know. The smell, the it's just of a different world. The best surfers in the world there have drowned. It's a gnarly place. So did you get there at any point? Were you just like, holy, hold up, what am I doing? Or the whole time were you just like, we're doing this?
I was pretty pumped on. The first day we got there, it was pretty big. I think it was been easy 20, 25 foot maybe, and south winds just blowing into it. And I had no idea. I just saw waves breaking. I was like, oh, why is there no one out? Like, don't know, strange. And funny enough, there was this other guy in the car park. He was a French guy. His name was Pelu. And he was just there to do the same as me. He was just frothing the Surf Mavericks. So we kind of just like, oh, fuck it, let's go out together. And yeah, paddled out and got out there, and it was pretty wild. Like, would have been easily the biggest waves I'd ever been in at the time. And like, yeah, horrible south wind up the face with big chops and whatnot, and stormy. And off memory, he got a wave that was like, it was pretty sick. And then I got one, and we were paddling back out, and there was a big set, and I was lucky. I was paddling a little bit wider than him and a little bit further out, but he copped the first one on the head as I was paddling over. I remember paddling over and looking down and just seeing him bail his board, copped it square on the head, and detonated. And then his board was tombstoning. Next wave came, still was underwater, and I was paddling over it again, just going, holy shit, he's still not up. This is real. This is wild. Got the next wave on the head, and then he was just gone. Like, didn't see him anywhere. And I was like, fuck, sat out there for a little while longer on my own. I was like, this is kind of heavy. Because I would have been, 16, so pretty young still, I think. And I was like, sitting out there going, fuck, this is kind of heavy. Like, I don't really want to cop one of them on the head. And I got lucky, managed to get a wave and just rode it in. And I was paddling around the other side of the rocks to go in. And I see him, he's just laying on his board. And the hood from his wetsuit, it was like, it's like a stitched on hood, had got fully ripped off. And he, just from like the impact of the water, and he said he got fully washed through the rocks and everything. He reckons he nearly died. And I was like, lucky that wasn't me, because I didn't have a vest or anything. So,
wow. And like it's not ideal conditions. So there's not a lot of guys out there. It's just you guys. There's no skis. There's no safety.
There's no one. Yeah.
And then, wild.
One of the old boys came down to the car park that he saw us when we came in. He goes, oh, I just saw that on the webcam. I just come to make sure that there was no bodies getting washed up on the beach.
Bro.
It was pretty wild, yeah.
Dude, all right. So
cool.
That
like, yeah.
That was your first session. What were the other ones like? Like,
not quite as crazy.
Did it clean up? Did people come? Did the people come eventually while you were there?
Yeah, I think a couple of days later, got lucky enough to get another session in that was like it was north wind, so it was really clean up, like the faces were real clean. It was, you know, maybe 10 of us out and probably 12 foot or so, like perfect. And just got a bunch of fun waves and probably had three sessions like that. So it was sick. Yeah. Had a really good trip that first trip.
So you, I assume, were just full of confidence, like coming off of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just pumped. Having the best time.
Did you explore Santa Cruz? Did you go around the area?
Yeah, we went down there. Been down there a few times, and yeah, had some fun surfs around down there. It's a sick place. Super fun. Heaps of good waves. So, yeah.
Yeah, the culture there is very, very unique to all the places I've been. Can you speak to the culture there of Northern California, the Half Moon Bay, the Santa Cruz area?
Yeah, I found, like, because I haven't spent a lot of time down Santa Cruz way, but up sort of San Francisco way, I found everyone was really nice and really friendly and sort of welcoming and sort of like, yeah, take you around and take you surfing, show you places. So that was really cool. I got to hang out with a heap of, like, yeah, really good crew over there. So I had a great time. All the trips I've done have been sick.
So you've been there multiple times now. How many times have you been out there?
Yeah, I think I did maybe like five or six trips, probably around five maybe. Yeah. I think, yeah, I went
Wow.
5 years in a row or something like that. Yeah.
Wow. So it was definitely on your staple list of a yearly thing to do, and kind of like where it sounds like where you got your heavy skill set. What was, can you tell us about your most memorable session out there in Mavericks, and when was that?
Yeah, I think the most memorable session would have been maybe, I'm trying to think what the year it was. I think it was 2014 in December. It was really big. It was the day that Jamie Mitchell got those really big ones from way out. It was a super busy day, but it sort of just pumped all day from dawn to dusk. And yeah, I just remember surfing all day. I only probably got maybe a handful, less than 10 waves, I think, all day. But all of them were, yeah, good waves, and just being surfed out at the end of the day and such a good vibe with everyone. So, yeah, that was sick, that session.
So like contrasting that first session where it's just you and the Frenchman to the premier session where there's just it, the conditions are great, but there's lots and lots of people. How do you handle yourself in the lineup to get your waves, and what's kind of your philosophy going into it?
Yeah, I guess when it's a busy lineup, you just gotta sort of wait your turn in a sort of to as much as you can, because it's so busy, people are just paddling around you all the time too. So if you see a wave that you want and you've been waiting a while, you just put your head down, you go. And if you know everyone can see that you're going, and you know you made that sort of action early, you usually will probably get the wave. But yeah, these days I try to surf with the least amount of people possible, so I try and avoid places like Mavericks and Jaws and stuff. Yeah, just because they're always so busy, and I much prefer just to surf on my own, just with my friends out. So we're pretty lucky here in WA that we can do that.
Physically, can you speak to that difference between the big waves such as Mavericks or Jaws, which you've also surfed, and even Nazaré, as far as like the size compared to these slabs that you get into? A person from the outside might think, oh, the bigger the wave, the more hardcore. But personally, the more I dial down to this and speak to people like you, the slabs just seem so much gnarlier. And from your position, someone who's been in both all over the world, can you contrast those two physical elements for us?
Yeah, well, I guess like the biggest contrast would be a wave like the right compared to Nazaré. and they're so different. Like, I guess you're towing both of them. They're both big waves. They're both got a lot of power in them, but to surf them, it's actually so different. Like, we had a session out at Nazare. It's the end of December. And so towing into a couple and just struggling, like I could barely hold a rail, just like survival stance down the whole wave, just going, holy fuck, this is so hard. I don't know how these guys do it when it's, you know, 80 foot, because it probably would have only been 20 or 30 foot or something. But then, you know, you go to a wave like the right, it's completely different sort of surfing, like different lines you take, where you position yourself, like letting go of the rope. And the length of the wave too, like Nazare, you're surfing for ages, and then, you know, you got to worry about when you kick out, you know, copping waves on the head, getting washed to the beach and all that kind of stuff. Whereas the right, you sort of kick out and you're in the channel right there and you can just chill. Your buddies are right there in the channel and you can just watch the next couple of waves if you want and sort of just hang out. It just, like, the intensity is the same, but in a different way. Yeah, it's hard to explain, but they're very different.
Great job explaining it for us. Let's go back to like this trajectory you were on coming off of Mavericks. From there, you go home, and then what was next on your list? I believe you went to Jaws pretty soon after that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it was possibly the next year. Yeah, I went to spent a couple of months in Hawaii and got lucky enough to go to Jaws. I didn't score it like massive, but it was pretty big still, and yeah, got a handful of waves, so it was super fun.
Well, Kane said that you were very prepare for Zach to be understated on calling his waves. And I get this message, because if you're out of Jaws, and from what I heard, like, I'm sure it was working pretty solid. Before we go there though, what was it about Hawaii in particular that got in you, that you were like, I got to get there next?
Yeah, I guess it's sort of that, like the proving ground, I guess like everyone sort of calls it, sort of where big wave surfing originated from, really. And, you know, you're sort of the epicenter of the surfing world, kind of. So I guess anyone that sort of, you know, wants to or has ever tried to be anything in surfing has gone to Hawaii to, you know, try and prove something and show that, you know, that they exist in the surf world. So it was kind of like, you know, you got to go to Hawaii at some point in your life, and you got to go to the North Shore and paddle out at Pipe and that kind of stuff. Paddled out at Pipe, and I don't think I ever caught a wave out there because it's so busy, but still had a great time the year that I went surfed. Yeah, once I realized that I was never going to get the wave I want at Pipe, it was just go to Sunset and surf that, and to be, you know, a handful of people out, and you'd be having the best time at, you know, 8 foot Sunset and surfing Waimea and body surfing the Shorebreak and that. It's so fun over there if you can just sort of, yeah, accept that you're not going to get that crazy one at Pipe and just go surf elsewhere.
Yeah, I too have been lucky enough to make it to Hawaii a bunch of times, and it's every single trip out of control. And the thing that strikes me most is that drive from the airport over the hill to the North Shore. Can you speak to the smell of Hawaii and that drive? And what was that first glimpse of the North Shore like for you? Were you you're coming off these Mavericks trips, you feel confident. Was there a moment where your confidence was questioned? And how was that first journey?
Yeah, sort of. I found Hawaii quite intimidating, really. Just there being that many sort of people, just so condensed into such a small area of surfing. But it's incredible too, the amount of good waves there are in such a small zone. Like, it's probably, it's, no wonder they call it the 7 mile miracle, because it is really. There's so many amazing waves so close to each other, and that's why everyone goes there, I guess. But yeah, it's definitely a crazy place, and definitely intimidating for someone that's sort of, rocking up there on their own for the first time and don't really know what to expect. And you see all that, and you're like, I'm sort of blown away with it. You're like, wow, this place is wild.
Yeah, have you ever seen that movie, The North Shore?
I have, yeah. Yeah, it's a classic.
Totally like that every single time.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
where were you staying?
Sort of bounced around just between different places, but we ended up staying up at Sunset for probably a month. Yeah, I stayed up at Sunset there and in a pretty cool place. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah, sick. So like shouts out to the Shanleys. I always stay at Sunset at Backyards, and that's kind of like been my spot. And every morning, you get on the Chexy, you get on the bike. Can you give us your morning routine when you were there that those that that year?
Yeah, it'd be, yeah, pretty similar to, I guess, what you'd be describing there. You get up, have a coffee, and walk out, check the waves, and go for a bike ride up and down, and see what it looks like, and yeah, see where's sort of the least crowded with a bit of a fun wave to surf. Yeah, it's a pretty rad spot that you can just jump on a bike and check fucking 10 waves in half an hour on your push bike.
Yeah, it's just insane. Did you get any good sessions at Backyards?
I didn't, unfortunately. Nah. So paddled out there a few times for a couple surfs, but yeah, never really got it pumping out there.
So Sunset was your go-to spot when you were on the North Shore.
It ended up being, yeah, just surfing Sunset heaps, because sort of was the least crowded when it was good, or like when it was sort of almost just that bit too big for it. It's like there'd be, yeah, only a handful of people out. You'd be doing a lot of duck diving, a lot of paddling, but yeah, find the odd diamond, and it's, yeah, always having good fun.
Yeah, it's been said that's like the best training ground for big wave surfers, and one of the best waves in the world for that, just in general.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, with the amount of effort that sort of it takes to get a good wave when it's big, is, yeah, it's a lot of good training, and you're getting smoked all the time. So yeah, I'd agree with that one for sure.
So you're hanging out over there. What was the Jaws setup like? How did you decide that, hey, I'm going over there?
Yeah, there was just a swell popped up that looked good for it, and yeah, the crew that I was staying with, they were yeah, I reckon it was gonna be good, so we sort of, yeah, just flew over for it. And it was a while, that was, yeah, it was maybe about 11 years ago now, so I can't quite remember the whole trip, but I remember rocking up to Jaws and driving down that little track and just being like amazed by it all, just thinking, wow, this place is pretty cool. Like, it just like in the videos, but better.
So you paddle Jaws. That's your entry into Jaws. Most people at that time and were towing. And tell us about that and how you were like, no, I'm paddling this.
Yeah, well, the 2 days that we had weren't super giants. I don't think there was really a need to tow those sessions, but they were still pretty big. And there's the walk down the cliff and sort of jumping out on that sort of rock beach is pretty gnarly, because you got like a 4 foot shore break onto giant cobblestones. But sort of just adds to the whole sort of craziness of the place. And yeah, you paddle out and you just see these giant rights just sort of grinding down this reef, and yeah, pretty sick spot.
Now, Kane said you famously, I think Slater, you there was a he was towing and you were paddling. Did you burn him or he burn you? Is that I want to know the story and get down to it. What happened there?
Yeah, so that wasn't at Jaws, that was at a different wave. That was actually in Australia. Yeah, he was over. Like this would have been in, I think, 2013 as well. Yeah, we were surfing this bommie, and he rocked up with a couple other guys, and I was with one of my friends, Camel. And yeah, Slater was towing, and we're all getting fun waves, and it was all good vibes and whatnot. But yeah, Slater towed into this one, and I was in the spot too. And yeah, Camel was just shouting at me to go. And I was like, ah, oh, fuck it. I'll just, if he's shouting at me to go, I'll just go. And yeah, I burnt him pretty good, but we both made the wave, and yeah, it was all smiling and laughs and whatnot. And yeah, Camel paddles up to him afterwards and goes, and just goes, oh, that's for when you burnt me in 95 at G-Land. Yeah, classic.
Oh, dude, that's so sick. So why Slater's not really known for towing. What was he doing towing?
I think they were just over on a trip and having some fun, and yeah, maybe he might not have had the boards to paddle. I think they were chasing a different wave too, and sort of just come and surf this bommie on this evening, just because it was pumping and you couldn't not surf it.
Are you allowed to say what it was?
I don't know. I
Yeah,
haven't really been. Yeah, I haven't really
yeah.
surfed it heaps. So yeah.
We'll call it X.
Yeah. Probably the best way to go.
Sick, sick. So like all the footage I've been watching, you got sick ones at Tahiti. I want to know a little bit about Tahiti and how Tiapu ranks up there in all the places you've been.
Yeah, Chopes is it's a wild spot. It's so cool. Just the whole place at the end of the road there is amazing. That the village and the reef and the wave itself, like, yeah, it's next level. You just paddle out the lagoon there, and you paddle all the way around and into the lineup, and it's insane to think that, like, people watched it from the beach and just thought, oh, let's go check it out and see what it is. And there's that crazy wave right there.
When was your first session there?
Was it only a couple of years ago I went there for the first time? Yeah, 2022. Yeah, I'd always wanted to go and sort of just never was able to, and just, yeah, just never lined up for me before. And yeah, sort of had it as a goal, as I want to go there and score a swell and then just hang out for a bit. So yeah, we saw a swell and went over and ended up hanging out for 2 months and had a great time, scored heaps of days. So yeah, it's an
Dang.
incredible spot.
Yeah, can you speak to maybe one of those best days and deliver us the aesthetic of that water? What's that? Every bit of footage I see of the spot, the water just stands out so diamondy. And then the wave, of course, is just gnar. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, the water is just crystal blue. It's like a swimming pool. It's so clear. It's like, yeah, like a, you can just, you don't even need goggles on. You can just see the bottom. It's amazing. So you can, when you're dropping down, you can see the reef and everything, which sort of makes it a little bit more intimidating because you can see all the coral and everything. But it's also kind of nice because it's mesmerizing. You're getting barreled and you can see all the reef underneath you, and the blueness of the wave and the light, and you're looking out of the barrel and you can just see these big green mountains, and just the contrast of colors is incredible. Yeah, it's so cool there.
And w would you classify that as a slab?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, but it'd have to be the best slab in the world, I'd imagine, just with how perfect it is. Because yeah,
Yeah.
most slabs, are so unpredictable, and they might close out or clap or just, yeah, not barrel maybe. Whereas Chopes, you know what it's going to do. It's going to barrel and it's going to be perfect, and then it's going to spit, and yeah, it's incredibly perfect.
And when you were there, did you gather any of this like deep ancient history as far as like when it was first surfed? And because it has to be one of the wonders of the world.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I'm not sure when it was first surfed, but yeah, the history of the place is so cool, and all the locals there and the way they live and have such a connection with the ocean, and yeah, with the Polynesians were sort of the first ones to, sail across oceans and stuff, and on their traditional canoes. It's, yeah, pretty cool.
And speak to that trip as far as the culture goes on the island, off the waves, and how did that rank as far as just the journey of the being a surfer there?
Yeah, all the locals are just so chilled and relaxed, and so just live a good like island life, I guess. Yeah, everything's on island time, which is cool. Sort of fishing heaps, and you go down to the marina, and there's like amazing fish there, tuna and everything that they've gone out and caught. And you can live pretty cheap over there too. You just get some rice and fish, coconuts, and yeah, it doesn't have to be a crazy expensive holiday. You can do it pretty cheap too, and yeah, everyone's super kind and welcoming over there as well.
So like people listening that don't know your history, don't know you, like they don't also understand that you're not like a millionaire. You're not someone who has just like sponsors funneling them money. You work, you're a hustler, and you then go and do these amazing things from the money you make. And I know you've done all sorts of things. You're known for also being a boat captain. One of the most interesting things I read on your list of things that you've done outside of surfing is pearl hunting. Can you speak to pearl hunting, how you got into that, and what is it all about?
Yeah, so well, the pearls, I wouldn't really call it hunting so much. We would, yeah, that was with my brother actually. We were just working on a pearl farm. It's pretty cool how they sort of farm them and stuff. But yeah, we were just working on that farm and sort of, yeah, cruising together on that one, which is cool. You get to see all these cool pearls and these crazy expensive ones, and yeah, learn about pearls, which is, they're pretty incredible things. But it was also a pretty shit job too.
Well,
yeah.
What is a pearl farm? And how does that work?
Yes, they just got like the oysters. They have them in these like panels that are suspended from a floating line on the surface, and they might have, I think this one farm that we were on in particular, I think there was about a million oysters on it. So there's a lot, yeah. But in these panels are sort of about, that, well, a bit bigger, but yeah, that big by sort of, yeah, that. And they've got about eight shells in them. And yeah, they seed them with a seed pearl. And then, yeah, the pearl grows around that. And yeah, they can get pretty expensive.
Interesting. So they actually have to put something, a seed pearl in there, and then it grows. So it's not naturally
Yeah.
in there.
No, like it can be natural, but then they're usually not perfect and round and stuff. Like they'll, yeah, so they put like a seed in there, and it, yeah, then grows like to be really nice and perfect and round without any imperfections and stuff.
That's incredible. So
Yeah.
there's so many bizarre things going on in my mind regarding this because a pearl. You heard pearl necklaces that go for a lot of money. People wear them as jewelry, but they come from the ocean in a shellfish. When you're collecting them, how do you know when you discover one that's just like a mind blower? What's the aesthetic of that?
A lot of them you can sort of see that they're not really that, like if they're not that good, you can kind of tell they just kind of don't look real nice. But if you get a really good one, you can kind of just tell that it just looks amazing. Like it looks perfect, and yeah, it doesn't look like flat and milky or anything. It's like nice and glossy, and yeah, sort of you just see it and you just kind of like, oh yeah, that looks expensive.
So what's the nature of that job? Do you what do you do?
Like our job on that one was, we're pretty much just cleaning shells and yeah, just real shit kicking on that, just busting barnacles off of the ropes and off the shells, and yeah, collecting the pearls that fall out of the dead ones and that stuff. Yeah, not very glamorous, but
do you do that underwater or on a dock?
No, it's on a boat. Yeah, above
wild.
The water.
And do these pearls, are they only found in a region of the world?
I think a lot of all these pearls were sort of up in the Kimberleys of like, you know, the top half of Australia, like the northwest kind of area.
Because I'm here in southeastern North Carolina, where we have beautiful oysters. They grow in not in the ocean, but in our like marshy areas. And I've never heard of a pearl in these oysters. So that's very curious to me.
Yeah, they are a different kind of oyster. Yeah, they're sort of not your oysters that you suck out of a shell at a restaurant, but you can eat the meat of them, and it is real good meat too, like pretty tasty. But yeah, sort of different to the normal oysters that you'd normally think of.
Have you journeyed to New Zealand?
I haven't yet. No, it's somewhere I'd really love to go, though. It looks amazing over there.
Interesting. I bring it up because I went there one time and they had these oysters called pumas, and the shell of the puma, culturally speaking, to the Maori, is just like they wear as necklaces. It's gorgeous, and that rang a bell. And the meat in them is also very good. So same kind of shellfish, but New Zealand, I would think would be high on your list as far as slabs and just waves go in general.
Yeah, it looks like an amazing place. It looks, uncrowded too, which looks cool and cold and really nice and scenic. So it ticks all the boxes. So I'd love to do a
just
trip over.
Living in a van, just posting up anywhere. Yeah. And from what I understand, I mean, that's what I did. And that was a while ago, but apparently you can still do it. So that's pretty nuts.
Oh, sick. Definitely somewhere.
Yeah, tell me where else is on your hot list for the future.
I'm not too sure at the moment. So just in WA, just focusing on the slabs here for the foreseeable future, our winter, I guess. Not really thinking of too much else at the moment. So just the waves we know and love here, the next few months at least, and just see what sort of pops up. If there's something that pops up in Fiji or something like that, would love to go, but just keeping it low key at home at the moment.
Fiji, has that been a place you've done?
Yeah, I've been a cloud break a couple of times, and that's a really good wave. It's got to be one of the best waves in the world as well.
Wow. Can you bring us there to Cloudbreak?
Yeah, it's a pretty wild spot because you're just surfing out in the middle of the ocean almost. Like, you're so far from land. Like, although, Tavarua and Namotu are right there, it's still a 10-minute boat ride. So you ride out just off the back of a reef pass, and off the back of the reef, the water goes down to 1,000 meters deep or something. So you're really out there, and it's got a lot of power because it's so deep. And the swell just comes in and unloads and grinds down that reef, and it's such an incredible wave.
From the footage, it looks beautiful. It looks makeable. The slabs that you go to just look gnar and heavy. Like, is this more of a playful place for you, or is there a gnarliness that I'm missing?
Oh, that's still definitely gnarly, yeah, for sure. Because it's so heavy still. It's like, I wouldn't really call it a slab, but it's just as hollow, and it's just long and just doesn't stop. Like, a slab will, break and then be over and let you out, whereas a cloud break just keeps on grinding and keeps on going. And sort of like an endless slab almost, in a way.
So your legs, I'm sure, are just like, are you, you gotta be they gotta be cooked.
You gotta have the stamina for sure. Yeah.
Let's go there next if we can, real quick. Like, what's your do you have a training regimen? Do you have like a plan when you're not surfing to stay fit?
I don't really have a proper training sort of schedule, I guess, or anything like that. It's sort of just surf heaps. I try to surf every day. And if I'm not surfing, fishing or something. So just always keeping active, really. Just doing something.
So surfing is your main training. That's where, what is your daily surfing schedule looking like? Like, where do you go, and what board are you taking, and what are these daily conditions like? We've been talking a lot about like your most epic points, but I'm sure the majority of the waves you surf are I guess training grounds.
Yeah, so I guess sort of everyday waves just be standard beaches and sort of fun reef breaks that I'd just be riding my 20 at, and I pretty much ride my 20 all the time until it's too big for it. So six foot, I guess. Yeah. So probably most days I just get up and check the waves, and if there's a surfable wave, I'll surf. Even if it's 2 foot and onshore, I'll just try and surf just to get in the water and have a bit of fun. And if the waves are pumping, I'll surf all day, or two or three times. Yeah.
So you guys have like real consistent waves where you are. Is that right?
Not super consistent. Like, there's always a wave, but it's not always good. A lot of the time it's pretty bad.
But you can stand up and ride most days.
Yeah, some of those days it's, on a longboard with no fins in, just because it's ankle high and onshore, but you're just trying to get in for a surf anyway.
Do you ever hit a foamy?
Yeah, I'll surf a foamy, for sure. I'll pretty much surf anything, I'll ride a door if I had to.
Hell yeah, dude. So the what is the beach then that is your local spot today?
I'm living up in Kalbarri at the moment, so I've sort of only just recently moved there. There's a pretty fun left point there that gets good, that's right in town, so probably surf that a fair bit. And there's some other beach breaks half an hour drive away that they're good to just surf every day.
And for us over here in the United States, where exactly is that spot? Like, where's your town?
Oh, so it's about a 6 or 7 hour drive north of Perth.
So just from my memory, that's kind of close to the right, is it not?
It's about a 10-hour drive from the right.
So is the right north of Perth?
South.
Oh, south.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was living down closer to it, but yeah, I just wanted to change a scene, and yeah, so moved up north a bit more.
What are your premier spots around you now? Can you say or like maybe describe them for us? Do you still have the slabs?
Yeah, still plenty of those kind of waves around, and not far from Nalu as well, which is good because that place is insane. That's such a good wave. It's probably one of the better waves in WA for sure.
Wow.
So, yeah, sort of just right in the middle between, the good waves up north and the good waves down the south. So, yeah, it's not far to just jump in the car and drive down to the right or something.
Is your boy Kane near you? Where is he staying?
Yeah, he lives about an hour away. So,
So you
yeah,
guys
not
can
too
link up
far.
for some footy. Some
Yeah,
footage.
for sure.
Sick. Well, I'm
Yeah.
really looking forward to seeing Cold Brew. I know you all premiered it. I guess it was last weekend. Can you tell us about how the movie wrapped up, the reception it got?
Yeah, so the premiere for it's actually this Friday, so in a couple of
Okay, it's
days we're
coming
having a
up.
premiere.
Sick.
Yeah.
So,
So
those of before you go, the people listening, I'm gonna put a link to in the show notes, but the trailer is so sick. And can you give us some words about the movie?
yeah, so that was today kind of just all came together. Really, me and Keane just decided to do a trip, and yeah, we just sort of were hanging out over in Portugal and managed to score a few good spells between Ireland, Portugal, and Morocco, and had a bunch of footage, and yeah, thought may as well put it together because yeah, Keane's done an amazing job on it, and just thought yeah, may as well chuck something together from our trip and something to remember and yeah, look back on and yeah. Enjoy the good times, really.
Yeah, his editing style, his way of shooting is just world class, and that's what he does best. So, shouts out to you guys for putting that together, and I can't wait to see it. Do you know if it's gonna be like on YouTube or Netflix, or what's the ultimate spot people can watch it?
Yeah, so it'll be on YouTube, yeah. So we'll premiere it, yeah, at a couple spots, and then yeah, it'll be up on YouTube for everyone that wants to have a look and can have a look if they want for sure. Yeah.
And sick. Another movie that came out, I think, a year ago that you were involved with was Pearl Moon, right? Yeah, that was
Yeah,
so
someone.
good.
Yeah, another friend, Rex did that one. We did a few trips, so just to the slabs around home and over to Ireland as well, and yeah, I can just put that together. Just yeah, footage we got over about a 6 month period or so, and just something cool to do. Get all this, footage, and rather than just going to waste and sitting on a hard drive forever, may as well, yeah, put something together of it and have a bit of fun and show people what you're up to.
So classic too, the way it all fit with the music. Awesome.
Yeah.
So before I let you go, what is like next for you this winter? Are you I know we kind of run through a lot of this stuff, but like are you going to focus on anything in particular, maybe outside of surfing or what are you going to be focusing also in your surfing?
Yeah, probably just chasing the slabs, really. That's in the surfing. Yeah, you just be yeah, waiting for swells to pop up, chasing the slabs, and then just surfing, the best waves with the least amount of people, really. Just trying to surf uncrowded waves and have fun with no one around. That's kind of my goal. Yeah.
Epic. Do you have any shouts out to any of your sponsors or anyone out there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, to Kian for putting together the movie and all his hard work, and Ion for supporting it and sort of giving us creative freedom with a few different things and to work on more projects. It's always good fun.
Tell us about Ion. I'm not familiar with it. What is Ion?
They're a wetsuit sort of wetsuit brand. They do a lot of kite surf and windsurf stuff and doing a lot of surf stuff now too, and the wetsuits are amazing. Yeah, really warm, really flexy. You never get cold in them, that's for sure. So it's really the perfect thing.
Hit, do they ship worldwide?
Yeah, they're available worldwide. They're a European brand from Germany. Yeah.
Nice.
And super warm and super comfy. So get into some.
Yeah. How did you link up with them?
I've been wearing their wetsuits for a while now. Just through a friend that was wearing them, and he linked me up with them. Yeah, probably near on 10 years ago. So been wearing them for ages now, and they've never let me down.
Awesome. Do you have any words of wisdom for the kids?
I just have fun. Just surf as much as you can and enjoy it, whether it's good or bad.
Love it, love it. And then I got to ask you, as I wrap up all the podcasts, what is the meaning of life according to Zach Haynes?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think it's just enjoy yourself. Meaning of life. I think, yeah, as long as you're having fun and enjoying yourself and just do whatever makes you happy, I guess.
Epic. Zach, thank you for
Yeah.
joining us. And audience, thank you for listening. This has been episode 50, and it's been a monumental episode. Zach has just delivered a breadth of knowledge that we could really get nowhere else. If you've enjoyed this episode, write us a comment, smash that like button, hit us up on Apple Podcasts. We're on YouTube, all the media out there. And Zach, thank you again for coming in and sharing your time this evening.
No worries. Yeah, thank you very much for having us on, Sean. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I wish you good luck and take care. Peace.
Likewise. Cheers. Have a good one. Cheers.
Zach, thank you, dude. Very, very much, man.
No
that
worries.
Was, yeah, so just like champion.
No worries at all. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Yeah. Yeah. And a PS, like, Kian said that you guys got into lifeguarding together, and I forgot to hit on that note. How did the lifeguarding like deliver you to the place you are today?
I guess it was just like a bit of a stepping stone, sort of with jobs and that kind of thing. Introduced me to Kian and stuff, and it gives you a lot of good knowledge though for sort of surfing and first aid and CPR if you ever have to use it. But yeah, pretty cool job to do for a little bit.
And thank you very much for that extra. Kids out there, if you're looking for a summer job, it's going to be going in the summer here in the United States. Go to your local beach, try out and see how you stand physically. I guarantee it's going to be a positive thing for you. And that is
Definitely.
It. Peace. Okay, for real. I had to get that one in there.
No worries. No, sounds good.
Yeah, dude. And I'll be continuing to follow you, and I'll probably release this next week, and maybe we can do a part two next, whenever's good.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds good for sure. No, thank you very much for having us on.
Yeah, Zach. Have a good night.
You too. Cheers. Have a good day.
Later, bro.
See ya. Bye.